America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
A possible negotiated peace deal was laid out in a heavily guarded compound in Baghdad mere days before the attack, but a top former Pentagon advisor says he was ordered not to pursue the deal. They were prepared to go anywhere to talk to cut a deal, the advisor said, but was told by Richard Perle that he could not proceed without approval from the U.S. government. A senior U.S. official said the government was unaware of anyone who was in a position to offer a deal that was acceptable to Washington at the time. A group of organizations have started a campaign in support of the award-winning documentary film The Revolution Will Not Be Televised after the Canadian Pacific Region chapter of Amnesty International decided to exclude it from an upcoming Amnesty International Film Festival. The film has provided insight into a historical event with exclusive footage that reveals the details of this unconstitutional and undemocratic overthrow of an elected leader that were previously omitted by the international mass media. An official from the Venezuelan chapter of Amnesty International described the decision as censorship. There is no other word to describe it. They just want to avoid controversy due to the pressure from Venezuelan opponents to the government, said the official. The Army said Wednesday it is negotiating to replace Vice President Dick Cheney's former company as an importer of oil products into Iraq, but denied that the talks were related to Democratic allegations of price gouging by Halliburton. Robert Folletti, a spokesman for the Army Corps of Engineers, said the Army needs to find a long-term importer to serve the Iraqi population and is talking with the U.S. military's fuel delivery agency. Folletti confirmed the negotiations after they were disclosed by Representatives Henry Waxman of California and John Dingell of Michigan, two Democratic critics of the company that Cheney led before he ran for the vice presidency. The lawmakers said the Pentagon's Defense Energy Support Center imports military fuel from Kuwait to Iraq for $1.08 to $1.19 per gallon, compared with the $2.65 per gallon that Houston-based Halliburton charges the U.S. government under a no-bid Army contract.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
Police reopened roads around Tower Bridge in London after mounting public outcry over traffic gridlock caused by a protester dressed in a Spider-Man suit who has been barricaded in the cab of a crane overlooking the bridge since last Friday in a protest over child access rights of separated fathers. The protester, David Chick, says Spider-Man is a favorite cartoon character of his two-year-old daughter, whom he says he has not been able to see for 8 months. Police had closed surrounding roads and their action caused traffic chaos all over wide swaths of South London. The London Chamber of Commerce estimates business lost £10 million every working day the roads were closed.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Does Burger King have a new fire-grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on a fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
In the Q&A session following speeches I give around the country, I'm often asked what can be done to get college students to participate in politics again. Here's an idea. Why don't we stand up for their interests by stopping the giant publishers of college textbooks from gouging students? Giants like Pearson, McGraw-Hill, and Thompson keep jacking up the price of these required texts. Overall, the price is up by 41% in only 5 years, and students, who are captive consumers, now have to spend nearly $1,000 a year on books. How do we know these prices are exorbitant? Because the textbook corporations sell the exact same books in England, France, India, Israel, Taiwan, and elsewhere for a third or half the prices that they charge college students here. Even if students buy through online discounters like Amazon, the price difference is stunning. A basic text on macroeconomics, for example, costs $114 from Amazon in the U.S., but Amazon's British division sells it for $72, including shipping. You don't need a Ph.D. in economics to figure out that 36% gouge, do you? Here's the good news. American students are figuring out their way around the gouging. Young folks are ordering their techs online from the country offering the best prices, sometimes banding together and getting deeper discounts by ordering in bulk. Some have turned loose their entrepreneurial spirit, creating small on-campus companies that buy cheap through the web, sell at a discount to fellow students, and pocket a neat profit. Even college bookstores are buying the publisher's product overseas, then selling cheaper to their student customers on campus. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, the publishing giants are howling, trying to stop this grassroots exercise of global consumer power. But their gouging is wrong, and it's time for our political leaders to side with students, using antitrust laws to stop the ripoff.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
I'm, am I on the air? Oh.
Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an earlier program, so don't call today, and thanks for listening.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
364 days of the year in America are devoted to corporations. Corporations have the right to organize. They can form corporations. They have the right to, or corporations have the right to organize together. They can form mergers and acquisitions. These have the right to organize together. They can form trade associations and lobbying groups and chambers of commerce. And not only do they have the right to, but they do. They are all over the United States organizing corporate power. And one day out of the year, we celebrate the hard-fought right of human beings to organize on behalf of labor. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome to our Labor Day program, broadcasting live on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting from the Sirius satellite system, Stream 145, the satellite radio system, and also broadcasting live on the Internet from IEAmericaRadio.com, RadioPower.org, Live365.com, and with archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org, by the way, the other day sent me a list of all the countries that have been listening to this program, and it ran like 30 or 40 countries. I won't bore you by reading the whole list, but it was amazing. And it wasn't just like one hit here, two hits here. It was, in some cases, thousands of listeners in other countries. In any case, welcome. Whether you be in the United States or overseas, whether you are listening from a land-based radio station, driving your car, sitting at home, or whether you're listening on the Internet, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Labor Day. Abraham Lincoln made the point, and this is a really critical one, that without labor, there would be no economy. There would be no products. Lincoln said, and I quote, "Labor is prior to and independent of capital. Capital is only the fruit of labor and could never have existed if labor had not first existed. Labor is superior to capital and deserves the higher consideration." Well, given that the average CEO in America makes more than $7,000 an hour, and that's the average, I think that Lincoln's priorities have been somewhat turned on their head. Dwight Eisenhower, I have three quotes for the day today from three American presidents. And two of the three are Republicans. Dwight Eisenhower said, and I quote, "Only a fool would try to deprive working men and working women of their right to join the union of their choice," end quote. And Jimmy Carter had a marvelous comment to make about Labor Day and unionization. He said, "Every advance in this half century," he was speaking in the second half century of the 20th century, "every advance in this half century, Social Security, civil rights, Medicare, aid to education, one and another, came with the support and leadership of American labor. Every advance." And let us not forget it. This is a remarkably important day, because it unlike the holidays that celebrate wars or birthdays of warriors or presidents or both, this today is the holiday that celebrates that which creates the vitality of the engine of American democracy, that thing that creates the vitality of that drives the engine that is America. And what is that? It is labor. Without you and me doing something, nothing gets done. If you'd like to drop into our chat room, go to liberaltalkradio.com and click on the chat link buttons, the chat room buttons. You'll drop into one of the most interesting and fascinating conversations, one of the most erudite group of people on planet Earth and certainly in cyberspace. Vega Centillion says, "Cool for us. I'll bet Tom wanted a day off, though. Actually, I love this. This is fun for me." And, yeah, it is work. I mean, Louise and I started working on today's program at 6 o'clock this morning and did a fair amount of show prep over the weekend. But participating in the renewal of democracy in America is such a high calling, such an extraordinary opportunity, that I am just in awe. I am honored to be here on the radio. I am honored to have you listening, and so pleased that and so pleased to have the labor of those people like Steph Stryker, who is engineering the program today in Detroit, and John Lucas, who's helping out. I don't know if Bill Vellner showed up. He's the head engineer down there. I'm not sure who else is in the studio at the network in Detroit. But all who are, I thank you, and I honor you and the work that you're doing, because these folks, Steph and John, they're helping make this program possible too, and it's a good and important thing, in my opinion. Not to flatter myself too much, I think that it's just a good and important thing that we have alternative voices, that we have somebody out there. You know, I guarantee you today, the right wingers are going to be on the radio in force. And they're going to be making their case that labor unions are whiny, selfish, grabbing for themselves, grasping pseudo-communists. That's the case they make over and over and over again. And it just goes on and on and on. For example, across the United States, there are 40 40 state-level, quote, free market think tanks, end quote, in 37 states that are centrally organized through something called the State Policy Network. Now, you probably never heard about this. Probably didn't even know it existed. 40 different organizations in the states across the United States, in 37 states organized by the State Policy Network. We have two of them here in Vermont, right here in the People's Republic of Vermont, about once a week or every other week or so on the radio, on Vermont Public Radio, we all get treated to the right wing. I'm looking for a word that is not slanderous, but to the right wing bizarre right wing logic of the Ethan Allen Institute and the organization called Vermonters for Better Education. Let me give you a quote from the Ethan Allen Institute. John McLowery is his head. He wrote an editorial in the Vermont newspaper, as these groups do. These are basically groups that are founded for the purpose of spewing right-wing propaganda. And most of them are very well funded, thank you very much. Right here in central Vermont, one of the largest radio shows, a one-hour-a-day radio show, with this right-winger woman just... She makes Rush Limbaugh sound like a moderate. And it's funded by one of these groups. So anyway, here's John McLowery. I mean, they do these things called bulk buys, where they just buy an hour from the radio station. Anyhow, here's John McLowery. The headline, "School children should be put above union interests." And he says, and I quote, "The teachers' union vehemently opposes such a school children first plan," he's talking about vouchers and things, "for good reason. The union's success is measured by the results of collected bargaining with school boards for as generous salary, benefit, and work rules as the taxpayers can be persuaded to pay for. With parental choice, some children will depart for non-unionized independent schools, threatening union job security and bargaining power." See, in the twisted, bizarre minds of some of these right-wingers, they think that the only thing that organized labor is interested in is me first, me too. My experience has been that, yeah, there is some of that out there, certainly. Just as you could say in the corporate world, there are those who say that the only, and rightly so, that the only things that the corporations are interested in is achieving their interests first. I mean, you know, Nike moving their shoe productions overseas. T-shirts cost the average amount of labor in a minimum wage shop in America. Making T-shirts is less than 25 cents per shirt. That's for a $10 retail shirt. 25 cents of that $10 cost was labor. Now tell me, why would that company move to China to make that T-shirt? Well, because in China, instead of 25 cents worth of labor in the T-shirt, there's now 3 cents worth of labor in the T-shirt, or 6 cents worth of labor in the T-shirt. And that extra 20 cents, they can pocket the corporation. Does it harm our nation? Yes. Does it rip apart the social fabric of America? Yes. Does it create rampant crime and poverty in the United States of America? Yes. Does it contribute to drug abuse, to multi-generational poverty? Yes. Does it end up causing people to be in prison? Yes. But it makes a little more profit for the corporation. And then these people have the audacity to suggest that there's something wrong with labor trying to protect their own interests. Of course labor is going to negotiate for the best terms they can get. And the corporate side is going to negotiate for the best terms they can get, and a compromise is going to be achieved where both are allowed to exist and survive. And the economy goes on. The period of maximum unionization in the United States was the 1950s and 1960s, and it was the time that the middle class of the United States was strongest and that our economy was the most stable in its 220-year history. So here we have these 40 organizations in these 37 states. The McLowry's received a $5,000 grant from the Milton and Rose Friedman Foundation to promote state-funded so-called educational freedom districts, end quote. You know, in other words, these right-wingers, they're getting all this cash. And they're really, they become shills for the local Republicans. These are the battlegrounds. These are the battle lines 364 days a year devoted to corporations, one day a year devoted to labor. And who's winning? We'll talk about it when we come back. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, by the way. 1-800-825-5937. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
I have a headache. I will take Tylenol now.
It's easy to forget sometimes. You don't have to do things the same way over and over. You have a choice.
I always take Tylenol.
But you could take Advil. Advil Liquigels are proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
I need data.
Clinical tests prove it. Advil Liquigels, advanced liquid-filled capsules, rush relief where you need it.
So I have a choice. I can choose Advil.
When was the last time you rethought your pain medicine? For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly. And if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy.
This is Dave.
Hey there. Dave has a problem.
Maybe you have the problem understanding that we can be under attack at any time.
Dave suffers from TMRWM, otherwise known as too much or right wing amidiitis, or something like that.
The alarm's at orange now. What does that mean? Where's my chart?
But Dave's not alone.
Another Saddam tape. He's still alive.
There are millions of Americans all over the United States suffering from TMRWM.
Oh, there's weapons of mass destruction there. Somewhere. They'll find them.
Symptoms of TMRWM include insomnia, irritability, suspecting more than 3 people a day of being a terrorist.
That guy right there looks like one. So does this kid. You're not fooling me, buddy.
And much, much more. But there is a cure.
There is?
You can get the best in progressive talk radio weekdays on the only progressive talk radio network there is, IE America Radio Network. Get more information at ieamericaradio.com. Let's save our country one American at a time.
Thank you, IE America.
Let go of me, Dave.
Sorry.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Come play about.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of years without cries. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Somewhere out there, I'm sure there is a right-winger of some sort who wants to tell me the error of my ways and about how the unions are terrible things and there's nothing but... And maybe Higgins will even drop into our chat room. Who knows? But anyhow, I would love to hear from you. Bring him on, as our fearless leader said before many of our young men and women got killed in Iraq today, by the way. Oh, and if you want to call, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-1-800-825-5937. Today is day 204 in the search for weapons of mass distraction, and day 720 in the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush, the son of George W.'s father's business partner, Osama bin Laden. Actually, it was Osama's brother that bailed George W. out of one of his business failures back about 15 years ago, as well as his daddy being in business with Poppy Bush. In working to crush the labor movement in America, are conservatives also crushing the hopes of democracy? Our question for the hour. In working to crush the labor movement in America, are conservatives also crushing the hopes of democracy? Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Matthew McGuire, the secretary of Local 344 of the International Association of Machinists in Paterson, New Jersey, proposed the Labor Day holiday in 1882 while serving as secretary of the Central Labor Union in New York. The first law was passed in the New York legislature on February 21, 1887. By 1894, 23 other states had jumped on board with labor days of their own. And Congress passed an act on June 28th of 1894, making the first Monday in September a legal holiday in the United States, as well as in the District of Columbia. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Storm in Southern Illinois is on the line. Storm, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Tom. Bush is always, or in many of his speeches, he talks about creating more jobs through what he calls more free trade, which is really corporate controlled trade. But I get so angry when I hear him say creating more jobs. Well, one thing is true: Bush and the Republican Party have created more new jobs. Except the problem is that these jobs are in India,
right, and China.
Well, yeah, but this one specific instance is the Republican National Committee hiring a phone bank in India to solicit money from America for Bush's campaign.
Yes, Storm, I have that in my stack of news stories to get to. I've been sitting on that thing for 4 days. I keep meaning to get around to it. It is outrageous, isn't it? The Republican Party has hired a company in India to pretend that they are Americans and call Americans in the United States to do fundraising for the Republican Party. It blows my mind.
Asking American citizens whose very jobs he's sending to India and China and other places to send him money so he can send more jobs to China and Vietnam and India and Mexico. That's ridiculous and disgusting, Tom.
Yeah, it's absolutely over the top. Storm, thanks for sharing that with us. I appreciate it. Thanks for reminding me of that. It's a perfect one for Labor Day. Good on you. I appreciate the call. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network.
research on pollution's impact on health tends to overlook its effect on behavior, according to a Wisconsin psychologist. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. If a chemical pollutant is found to cause cancer, public alarm usually leads to regulations that limits people's exposure. But information on how chemicals negatively affect behavior, including motor and mental skills, is often ignored. Colleen Moore levels that charge in her book, Silent Scourge. Moore, a psychologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, emphasizes the importance of looking at behavioral effects of pollutants, especially on children.
Children are usually more sensitive to the effects of pollutants. And one principle of the effects of pollutants on children is that one negative influence on a child's life usually will not take them down a bad path, but multiple risks accumulate.
Moore says behavioral studies of pollutants are often overshadowed by cancer concerns.
An example of the neglect of the behavioral findings is part of the arguments over PCB cleanups. A lot of times the industries that will have to bear some of the financial costs argue that PCBs are only a suspected cause of cancer and we need not worry very much. But that neglects the effects on children's intellect.
Studies on children in Japan have found that exposure to PCBs made kids apathetic and lethargic. PCBs have also been found to affect children's play behavior. Moore's book focuses on five different pollutants, including PCBs, lead, mercury, and noise. She says behavioral research on each one has been done for years, but the studies get little notice. Moore says these impacts fall most heavily on children and merit a closer look when determining the health impacts of pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk. Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Ago and we were apparently not on the eve of destruction. Maybe we were. Maybe we walked right up to the edge and then danced back. But we're still here. We're still here, and that's one of those things that gives me hope. I suppose, since we are all the ancestors of people who survived, or we are all the descendants, rather, of people who survived, that hope is wired into our genes, that those who didn't have hope, who didn't make it through, that those who died in the plagues and in the wars and everything else, by and large, didn't produce offspring. So we get more and more hopeful. Maybe there's some, you know, biological thing there or something. But I continue to have hope. And I think that in some ways,
this incredibly sneaky stuff that the Bush administration is doing these days actually is a hopeful thing, because they have taken off the mask. They're not trying to pretend anymore that they're Rockefeller Republicans. The Republican Party, the takeover started in 1964 when Nelson Rockefeller got up and tried to give a speech in which he complained about the fact that he was being harassed, he was getting death threats, because he was a moderate Republican. And he was booed down at the Republican National Committee meeting, the big nominating convention, the Republican National Convention, rather, of 1964. And then Barry Goldwater followed him, and he got up and he said, extremism in defense of liberty is no vice. And the crowd went nuts. Oh, and Nelson, and they proposed a platform to the party plank, or a plank to the party platform in 1964 that would have rejected the Ku Klux Klan. And it was voted down. The Republican Party refused to reject the KKK. This was the beginning of what Richard Nixon would later call the Southern Strategy, embracing racists in the South. And, as we see with Trent Lott and Strom Thurmond and old Jesse. And, taking the racists from the Democrats in some cases, even. In any case, it's remarkable. In our chat room, Nestora Vegas Centillion talks about how in Benton, Illinois, the teachers are on strike and many residents are upset because the fall sports schedule is off track. They use that as an excuse to say they're against the teachers' union. This is the blame the victim thing. The conservatives, you'll recall, years ago, before anybody on the left was talking about class warfare, other than maybe the very fringe communists who'd been talking about it since the 1800s, years ago, a decade or more ago, 10, 15 years ago, the cons began this continuous drumbeat of, oh, the liberals are engaging in class warfare. It's all about class warfare. Why? Because they were declaring class warfare. If you can accuse the enemy of what you yourself are doing, then when the enemy says, no, you're doing it, it sounds weaker. Very often it's not at all effective. So here we have situations where every time a union goes on strike, you will find cons out there pointing out everything wrong that happened as a result of it and blaming it on the union. Nobody blames it on the multi-million-dollar CEO salaries. Nobody blames it on corporations engaging in practices that are ripping apart the social fabric of this nation. Instead, it's the union's fault. It's labor's fault. How dare they? This is wrong. It's outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. Business is well organized. The corporate form, the chambers of commerce, the corporations combined with each other by way of mergers. I mean, look at Time Warner AOL. This is not a union of individual organizations and companies operating to the benefit of all. Look at General Electric, this huge defense contractor that owns NBC and a zillion other companies. That isn't some form of organizing? Fox News, Disney, I mean, the list goes on forever. This used to be against the law in the United States. Thomas Jefferson proposed 10 amendments to the Constitution. 2 of them didn't make it through. Now, because many of the founders were deistic Masons, they thought that numbers had a special significance, and 10 was one of the great numbers. So they wanted there to be 10 amendments to make up the Bill of Rights. And so the Sixth Amendment was stretched into the Sixth, Seventh, and Eighth. The Sixth Amendment originally said that you have a right to a trial by a jury of your peers, that it shall be a quick and speedy trial, and you have the right to make bail during that trial. But when two of the other amendments that Jefferson and George Mason had originally proposed and James Madison championed before the Constitutional Convention of 1787, 1788, when they failed, when these two failed, they took the Sixth Amendment and split it into three pieces, so they'd still have 10, a nice even number. One of those had to do with armies and guns, and we'll talk about that someday. It's how and why the Second Amendment came about. It's a fascinating discussion. But the other was a critical one. Jefferson strongly believed in this, and to his dying days, complained about the fact that this didn't make it into the Bill of Rights. He suggested that there be, quote, a ban on commercial monopolies, end quote. Or, at other times he said, a ban on monopolies in commerce, end quote. Thomas Jefferson believed that companies should not be able to form themselves together into unions in ways that could harm labor, that could harm the interests of the United States, that could become so powerful that they could end up with CEOs as the President and Vice President of the United States making energy policies and other policies, war policies, for the benefit of their crony buddies. This, in his mind, would be the end of American democracy. Jefferson was absolutely opposed, as were most of the founders, to the organization, to the unionization of corporations. Now, why didn't this make it into the Bill of Rights? Because, Hamilton and Adams argued, it was already a law in every single one of the 13 states. Every single state had a law that said it was illegal for corporations to buy other corporations or own stock in other corporations. Every single state had a law in the books that said it was a felony, in most cases punishable by prison time and certainly by the dissolution of the corporation, for any corporation or any officer or any representative of any corporation to participate in any way in politics, to try to influence politics or any politician, or to give money to any politician or any political crime. It was a felony! Every state in the Union, when the Constitution was signed, had laws on the books right up through the turn of the 19th and 20th centuries. Had laws on the books that said corporations could only exist for 30 or 40 years, at which time they had to go through the same kind of probate process that humans do when they die. Every state in the Union had laws on the books that said that the first thing that a corporation had to do when it was formed was serve the public good. And that the Attorney General of every state every year had to examine every corporation authorized in that state, and if they were failing to serve the public good, they were dissolved. They got the death penalty. Every state in the Union had laws on their books that said that a corporation could only do one thing. People were welcome to form corporations to make money. It was encouraged. It built America. But each corporation could only do one thing. Corporations could not form unions as they are now. Only they don't call them unions, of course. They call them M&As, mergers and acquisitions. It was a crime in America for almost 200 years in most states. In all states for over 100 years. And then these folks have the audacity, the absolute audacity, to complain when labor, when we the people, when the workers who built this nation, yes, I know, in Ayn Rand's idealized, bizarre, fictional world, it was the capitalists who built this nation. And I know the objectivists like Alan Greenspan and the philosophical founders of the right and the Ayn Rand group and the Cato Institute, the American Enterprise Association, I know that they all think that it was capitalists who built America. I'm sorry. It was labor. In many cases, it was slave labor. In many cases, it was indentured labor. but it was labor that built the United States. As Abraham Lincoln said, our quote for the day, our quotes for the day, labor is prior to and independent of capital. Prior to, what does that mean? It means that before you can make money, you've got to do something. Labor is prior to and independent of capital. Capital is only the fruit of labor and could never have existed if labor had not first existed. Labor, Abraham Lincoln said, is superior to capital and deserves much the higher consideration. It's Labor Day, 15 minutes before the hour, the first hour of our program today, Labor Day 2003, Monday the 1st of September, here in the United States of America. If you'd like to call the program, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, and Mike in D.C.'s on the line. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program, Mike.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Hey, Mike, I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm here lamenting the more abundance of labor in the country.
Actually, Mike, did you know that in the last year, 500,000 people, now this is in the middle of a time when in the last 3 years, 3 million people have lost their jobs and 9 million people in the United States are unemployed, more than at any time in the history of the United States since the Great Depression. In the last year, 500,000 people joined labor unions.
Well, thank God for that.
Yeah, there's actually a revival going on in the labor movement. You won't find out about it on faux news, but
no,
it's happening.
Not. You know, just to touch on a couple of the topics you've been talking about. You know, first and foremost, people forget that during the original Red Scare in the 1800s, late 1800s. You know, the capitalists were so afraid of unions because they were communists. This is before the First International, even. You know, they didn't want them to organize. Mm. And that, unfortunately, we forget that Roosevelt the First, Teddy Roosevelt, was the one that deconstructed the monopolies or trusts. He was known as the Trust Buster for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, you know, we tend to miss the point that when they're screaming about class warfare, and I mean the cons, they're committing class warfare and have been every day of the year, and they have been since the beginning of the since right after the Civil War. They have been
since the times of feudal Europe, when feudalism first emerged, the system of government that you could call rule by the rich, which the cons are trying to bring back to America today.
Correct.
Pardon my interrupting.
No. You're right on. But, I mean, it really took flight here in the States because of the industrial boom that was caused by the Civil War, especially in the North. The various large corporations grew larger, and you know they were the ones who were championing laissez-faire capitalism, and that was the reason that they were importing. They weren't allowing. They were actually actively going out and soliciting immigrants to this country so that they could keep labor rates cheap. After all, as the railroad magnates noted, it was cheaper to use up human beings than it was use things like Westinghouse's air brake. You know, it's just cheaper to chew up human beings and pay nothing. If you were lucky, they threw what was left of you in a cardboard box and shipped it to your relatives to dispose of.
Yeah. Well, in fact, Louise and I, one of the first times that we were in an Asian country that I shall not name, not China, but one of the industrialized Asian nations, we saw a horrific accident on television, on the television news that night. And the commentator came on and talked about how the person who was driving the car, it was a drunk driver, had killed a bunch of people. The person who was driving the car was going to have to pay $500 to each one of the families because the nation had determined that the value of a person, if you killed them, was $500, and that this had originated with the labor laws. in that country, so that if people got killed on the job, they had to be. But it was this piddling amount, but it was definable. So, Mike, last word. We got 5 seconds here.
I just wanted to agree with you and wish you a happy Labor Day, and hope that we can rise up and defeat the beast.
There you go, Mike. Thank you. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Anyone who gets heartburn knows how irritating it can be, which is
why you want to feel really fast. I mean, the instant Maximum strikes my lines, a liquid hits your throat, you can feel it rushing right to where you need it.
Ah, the cool liquid hits the back of your throat, and you know you're feeling something
velvety smooth, soothing that burning inside you. My Lanta's wonderful, wet, drenching sensation
restores and refreshes in a most glorious fashion.
Try Maximum Strength My Lanta.
Soothing at the
speed of life.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Molloy Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man for people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't
he? Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
right. Well, it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to
go on. Oh, my God.
Yeah, why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Again, let's return to that great era in American history when unions were free to actually function. Yes, there was resistance to them by organized corporations, but many Americans in the 1950s, 75% of Americans supported unions, whereas now only 65% of Gallup poll respondents this last August said that they approve of labor unions. You can see that the cons have been working their ways and getting their message out, and it's time to roll it back. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Pablo in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Pablo, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to briefly tell you about something I've noticed over the years. On every Labor Day, in the newspaper, there'll be an article, and the headline will be something like, Americans, the hardest workers on the planet, or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, which sounds pretty good, but then basically what it is that we work much longer hours than people in Europe or Australia or someplace like that, and instead of that basically being, you know, a negative, like we have less free time to spend with our families or do other things, it's promoted as, you know, gee, aren't we great? We're the hardest workers. And it's, you know, it's one of these propaganda things which seems to pop up kind of distorting the purpose of Labor Day.
Yeah, this is the key to what they call free trade. I mean, what's free about free trade, Pablo, is that Americans have the ability to compete freely with a 10-year-old child in Burma who is literally locked into a room and threatened with death if they don't work for 10 cents an hour. I mean, literally. And that's free trade. And so what we're finding is that compared to many other nations in the world that haven't chosen to jump onto this so-called free trade bandwagon, like France, for example, that the United States is sliding in the direction of a third world country. Pablo, thanks for the call. I appreciate your comments. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
It's coming through a hole. From the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Yes, I'm calling about
about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
A possible negotiated peace deal was laid out in a heavily guarded compound in Baghdad mere days before the attack, but a top former Pentagon advisor says he was ordered not to pursue the deal. They were prepared to go anywhere to talk to cut a deal, the advisor said, but was told by Richard Perle that he could not proceed without approval from the U.S. government. A senior U.S. official said the government was unaware of anyone who was in a position to offer a deal that was acceptable to Washington at the time. A group of organizations have started a campaign in support of the award-winning documentary film, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, after the Canadian Pacific Region chapter of Amnesty International decided to exclude it from an upcoming Amnesty International Film Festival. The film has provided insight into a historical event with exclusive footage that reveals the details of this unconstitutional and undemocratic overthrow of an elected leader that were previously omitted by the international mass media. An official from the Venezuelan chapter of Amnesty International described the decision as censorship. The Army said Wednesday it is negotiating to replace Vice President Dick Cheney's former company as an importer of oil products into Iraq, but denied that the talks were related to Democratic allegations of price gouging by Halliburton. Robert Folletti, a spokesman for the Army Corps of Engineers, said the Army needs to find a long-term importer to serve the Iraqi population and is talking with the U.S. military's fuel delivery agency. The lawmakers said the Pentagon's Defense Energy Support Center imports military fuel from Kuwait to Iraq for $1.08 to $1.19 per gallon, compared with a $2.65 per gallon that Houston-based Halliburton charges the U.S. government under a no-bid Army contract.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
Gary Ridgway, the so-called Green River Killer, pled guilty Wednesday to the murders of 48 women in a deal that will spare him from the death penalty for those slayings and assure him a sentence of life in prison without parole. Under state law, the Washington State Supreme Court is required to review every death sentence handed out and must consider whether the sentence is excessive or disproportionate to the penalty imposed in similar cases. In theory, at least, someone on death row for a murder in Texas could appeal on the grounds it's unfair to execute him while Ridgway was spared. German transport authorities said Wednesday a teenager previously convicted of joyriding with public transport managed to gain control of a Berlin train full of passengers. The Berlin Metro Rail Network said the train driver on duty had unwittingly given the 19-year-old, who was posing as a replacement driver, control of the train during the evening rush hour. He apparently picked up passengers along the way, a Berlin court spokesman said. The best thing would probably be to give him an official job.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
In the Q&A session following speeches I give around the country, I'm often asked what can be done to get college students to participate in politics again. Here's an idea. Why don't we stand up for their interests by stopping the giant publishers of college textbooks from gouging students? Giants like Pearson, McGraw-Hill, and Thompson keep jacking up the price of these required texts. Overall, the price is up by 41% in only 5 years, and students, who are captive consumers, now have to spend nearly $1,000 a year on books. How do we know these prices are exorbitant? Because the textbook corporations sell the exact same books in England, France, India, Israel, Taiwan, and elsewhere for a third or half the prices that they charge college students here. Even if students buy through online discounters like Amazon, the price difference is stunning. A basic text on macroeconomics, for example, costs $114 from Amazon in the U.S., but Amazon's British division sells it for $72, including shipping. You don't need a Ph.D. in economics to figure out that 36% gouge, do you? Here's the good news. American students are figuring out their way around the gouging. Young folks are ordering their texts online from the country offering the best prices, sometimes banding together and getting deeper discounts by ordering in bulk. Some have turned loose their entrepreneurial spirit, creating small on-campus companies that buy cheap through the web, sell at a discount to fellow students, and pocket a neat profit. Even college bookstores are buying the publisher's product overseas, then selling cheaper to their student customers on campus. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, the publishing giants are howling, trying to stop this grassroots exercise of global consumer power. But their gouging is wrong, and it's time for our political leaders to side with students using antitrust laws to stop the ripoff.
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an earlier program, so don't call today, and thanks for listening.
He's been written about in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Pravda. He spent time with the Pope and the Dalai Lama. And now you can talk with Tom Hartman simply by calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations on the iAmerica Radio Network, broadcasting from outer space on the Sirius Radio satellite radio system, Sirius Stream 145. And broadcasting live on the internet at radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. This is Tom Hartman. And today is Labor Day. Labor Day. It is also day 204 in the search for weapons of mass destruction, day 720 in the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush, also known as the brother of the man who bailed George W. Bush out of business bankruptcy, and the son of the man who is business partners with George W. Bush's father, also known as Osama bin Laden. From 1965 to 1998, the two lowest-paying sectors, retail and service, increased their share of employment from 30% to 48% of all production and non-supervisory employment, says Beth Shulman in her book, The Betrayal of Work. She points out that in 1963, 37% of all production and non-supervisory workers were employed in the three middle-paying sectors, whereas by 1988, the share of the three middle-paying sectors had dropped to only 16% of the workforce, while the bottom three sectors had risen to 63% of the workforce. There's a real shift going on in America, and I'm very pleased that today Beth Shulman is on the line with us to tell us about what's happening, where it's happening, how it's happening, who it's affecting, what its consequences are, and what it'll mean for democracy. Beth Shulman is a lawyer and consultant and former vice president of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. She lectures extensively on the issues of low-wage work and has authored articles on this subject, as well as this extraordinary book, The Betrayal of Work. Beth, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. Recently, we had Eric Schlosser, the author of Fast Food Nation, on the program. His book describes the grueling conditions of fast food workers and food processing plants and how hard it is to make a living in that field.
When most people think of low-wage workers, though, they usually think of people at McDonald's. In fact, it's almost become a cliche. You know, you're going to go flip burgers for a living. But you say that fast food jobs are less than 5% of all low-end jobs?
Yes. There's a real myth about what low-wage jobs are. The reality is that they're nursing home workers and child care workers, janitors, hotel workers, educational assistants, security guards. Fast food workers make up a very, very small percentage of the low-wage workforce. The other issue, Tom, that's just especially important on Labor Day is that, you know, America honors work. We believe in work, yet we're failing to reward it for these over 30 million Americans in low-wage jobs.
Mm. Yeah, and it's not just an individual and personal tragedy on the family-by-family basis. This is ripping apart the fabric of the United States. This is harming democracy.
It is.
At its core.
It is. You know, when you have 30 million Americans, one out of every four workers making less than $8.70 an hour, that's the federal poverty wage, it really changes what America really is all about. You know, there was an American ideal about really creating a large middle class in which everyone could have the basics of a decent life. That's not true for over 30 million Americans, and it really changes the very foundations of America.
Yeah, it's pushing us back into third world status in many ways.
Right. There's a real polarization going on in the United States as opposed to really keeping a very middle class kind of society in which everyone can kind of have a piece of the American dream.
Yeah. And there are a series of myths that the conservatives, perpetuate about low-wage labor, and you point out some of them in your book. One of the ones that's, and I want to get to those and go through those, one of the ones that's most conspicuous in my mind is that low-wage labor is the reason why, or the ability to manufacture offshore, for that matter, where the labor is even cheaper, is the reason why we have inexpensive goods, and that if labor was to be appropriately paid, then the cost of everything would rise to the point where the middle class would just go bankrupt and have to fall apart in despair because we couldn't afford to buy anything. This is conventional wisdom, Beth. I mean, you got, you know, Limbaugh and all these bozos out there saying this every single day, basically. And politicians as well.
Absolutely. I've got to laugh at that. I mean, we pay CEOs 400 times the amount of rank-and-file worker, and we don't talk about how much that's going to increase, you know, the cost of a good. Yeah, there's a chance there may be a few cents extra, but, you know, we're talking about a few cents as opposed to someone actually being able to take care of their family and provide the basics of a decent life. The other thing is it's costing us a lot not to do anything. You know, we're subsidizing employers who pay their people so little that they actually have to go on food stamps. We subsidize the employers who don't provide health insurance to their workers. The ones that are basically subsidizing those that don't. So, and you know, there's costs, enormous costs right now for not doing anything.
Yeah. You mentioned that one of the myths of low-wage work is that it is low skill. You point out that an interesting angle on this notion, that low-wage, high-skill work requires skills that are traditionally associated with women, caring, nurturing, communicating. You want to expand on that a little?
Absolutely. There's, you know, I listen to the press over and over and over again. In fact, they talk about low-wage, low-skilled jobs or low-wage, non-skilled jobs, like as if they're you know, kind of entwined together. The reality is quite the contrary. I mean, if any of us have seen what it takes for a nursing home worker to take care of our parent or a child care worker to take care of one of our children or an educational assistant, you know, those involve enormous amounts of skills. I mean, you know, it's not that these are unskilled jobs. They're enormously skilled. They're not the skills that a lot of people love to look at in terms of computer skills, but they're certainly skills in terms of compassion, caring, attention to detail. They involve the lives of human beings on a day-in and day-out basis. They're very skilled jobs, and I point that out in my book. I take people into the various low-wage jobs and show them what it really takes to do these various jobs in my book, The Betrayal of Work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking with Beth Shulman, the author of The Betrayal of Work. Beth, is there a website for your book or for your information?
Yes, there is. It's www.thebetrayalofwork.com. thebetrayalofwork.org.
Thebetrayalofwork.org. Okay. Great. Thank you.
There's other myths. You know, Tom, you mentioned the myths about low-wage work. One of the other myths around low-wage work is that most of these workers are either teenagers or high school dropouts or illegal immigrants. The reality is that two-thirds of the low-wage workforce are white. Majority, almost 60%, are women. These are people who are adults with family responsibilities. Two-thirds have a high school education. Many have college credits. And, in fact, a percentage also has a college degree. So the myths really kind of allow us to not look at the realities of who's in these jobs, how essential these jobs are to our economy, and the failure or the inability of these jobs to really provide mobility into the middle class.
Now, one of the big, we'll solve this cures, quick fixes that the cons out there are suggesting is that all we have to do is retrain these people.
Right.
People lose good manufacturing jobs that make $15, $20, $25, $30 an hour, and we'll retrain them so that they can get a job in the new sector, whatever that may be, information or computer. And yet, at the same time, we hear things like this IBM conference call that the New York Times publicized a couple of weeks ago, where they were sitting around talking about how 3 million white-collar jobs are going to go offshore. I mean, the Republican Party has just hired a telemarketing firm in India to raise money for the Republican Party. So it's like the retraining industry seems like it's a nice little scam. But do you really think that retraining is the solution to this?
Surely, you know, there's no doubt that the more education, more training helps all of us in terms of the kind of the choices we can make. But it is a myth to think that retraining is going to solve the issue of low-wage work. These sectors of the economy, the service sector, retail sector, are expected to be 30% of our workforce by 2010. We have to adequately reward these jobs that are essential to our economy. And there's fewer career ladders. There's fewer job ladders within those sectors anymore. And we need to address that so that everybody can have just the basics, a livable wage, basic health insurance, some time off to be with their families. And these are choices we're making, Tom. I mean, this isn't, you know, the economy is not just a force of nature. There's political choices that are being made every day, from the tax cuts that enrich, you know, those at the top, to whether or not we increase and keep the minimum wage to its value of 1968. The minimum wage has lost $2 in value since 1968. We need to bring it up so people can make a decent wage.
Many states have done, as Vermont has done, for example.
Many states have done that. And, you know, it's time to make sure that it's not a question of whether you live on one side of a line, a state line or the other, is a determination in terms of whether you have a living wage.
One of the other big con suggestions, one of the other big conservative positions, is that business owners are taking risks by investing money in a company, and therefore the workers are not taking any risks. They just show up for work, and if it goes away, they can go find some other job. So therefore, you know, we can afford to take advantage of them. I mean, forget them. What rights should they have when we, the owners, are taking all the risks? They overlook, a whole lot of obvious risks you talk about in your book. One that I don't think you mentioned, I haven't read the entire book cover to cover, but I've spent some time with it, is the risk of wasting your time and life in a dead-end, low-paid job. But you also list a number of other risks. You want to get into those?
Oh, there's the risk. I mean, every day, workers in these jobs risk the most hazardous conditions of any other workers. They risk the fact that they can't have time off with their family. You know, workers are spending their lives in jobs essential to us. And yet, you know, we're pretending that they're not important to us and important to our economy.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. These jobs, you know, there's a tendency to think of low-wage jobs as basically just the same as other jobs. They just pay a little lower. But the reality is, again, that these jobs is not just that they have low wages. Most of these jobs don't have health benefits. They don't have pension benefits. They work in the most hazardous conditions. They have the most rigid schedules. They have the least amount of vacation. So, I mean, if you're in these jobs, the risks are enormous in terms of just your basic daily life.
Great. One of the folks, Brain Shrub, in our chat room, we have a live chat room that runs when we're on the air. And so anybody who has access to a computer can just go to liberaltalkradio.com and follow the chat room links and drop into it. One of the folks there, Brain Shrub, who I believe is listening in Illinois, has a great question for you here, Beth. Let me get to it right after this break, though. That music means that we have come up against the edge of this time. Beth, hang on the line if you can, and we'll continue this conversation right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Daddy, can't we read a different book tonight?
Shh. We're just getting to the good part. To set the correct throttle position, loosen the pinch bolt to rotate the governor arm.
Have a passion for fixing things? Sears has over 4.5 million parts for all major brands of lawn equipment and home appliances. Call 1-800-4-MY-HOME. Click on Sears.com or come into a Sears Parts and Repair Center. Where can you find parts for all major brands, no matter where you bought them? Sears. Good life, great price.
Dad, this race car game is awesome. Want to drive?
Oh, I love that game, but not with a bad headache.
You want to go home?
The moment of choice. Which will work better on your headache, Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, you'll feel better faster with Advil Liquid Gels. These advanced liquid-filled capsules rush relief where you need it. They're proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
Can we stay a little longer?
Let's try virtual reality skiing.
Yeah!
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
Anyone who gets heartburn knows how irritating it can be, which is
why you want to feel really fast. I mean, the instant Maximum Strength Mylanta liquid hits your throat, you can feel it rushing right to where you need it.
Ah, the cool liquid hits the back of your throat, and you know you're feeling something
velvety smooth, soothing that burning inside you. Mylanta's wonderful, wet, drenching sensation
restores and refreshes in a most glorious fashion.
Try Maximum Strength Mylanta.
Soothing at the speed of life.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Show. Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troops' lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and in a
This
in
is
a
what they
contract?
Said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
strain.
The founding fathers were disgusted with the old European landed aristocracy notion. One of the founding premises of our country is the birth rank should never give anyone an unfair advantage in life. We have this, we have this rampant libertarian wing that's tearing up the estate tax, affirmative action, and every safeguard against giving the silver spoons that unfair head start. They say that how well one does in life depends on the choices he makes alone. Yet, here in Beth Shulman's book, she quotes a conservative libertarian who admits that accident and not choice can be a major factor in one's success. Beth, in your book on page 83, you say, as conservative University of Chicago economist James Heckman so aptly notes, never has the accident of birth mattered more. If I am born to educated, supportive parents, my chances of doing well are totally different than if I was born to a single parent or abusive parents. I am a University of Chicago libertarian, but this is a case of market failure. Children don't get to buy their parents, and so there has to be some kind of intervention to make up for these environmental differences. End quote. Beth, don't you think the intervention would simply be a living wage?
Absolutely. I mean, the children of low-wage workers start off without, you know, quality child care. They end up in schools that are worse than many of the most middle class. They don't have the kinds of time they need with their parents. There needs to be a livable wage that helps them to have the kind of money to provide the basic things, resources for their children. There needs to be quality child care so that every child really has equal opportunity in this country. And it's not a matter of how much your parents can pay. Every child needs to have basic quality child care in the United States. And we need to ensure that there's basic health care for all of us. You know, in the United States, we've determined over and over that, for instance, the elderly shouldn't be impoverished. So we passed Social Security. We determined that the elderly should have basic health care, so we passed Medicare. Now it's time, it's the right time, to ensure that every working American and their children have the basics of a decent life, a livable wage, basic health insurance, time to be with your family, and some quality child care.
Amen. We're speaking with Beth Shulman, the author of The Betrayal of Work, How Low-Wage Jobs Fail 30 Million Americans. Her website is thebetrayalofwork.org. And, Beth, some of our listeners who don't have... And by the way, if you'd like to call and have a question for Beth, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And, Beth, we have a break coming up in about a minute and a half. It'll last a couple of minutes, and then we'll have a little bit more time to talk if you're able to stick around.
Sure.
Okay, great. Okay. You say that the vast income inequalities undermine the very rationale for our system. You quote MIT economist Frank Levy, on one of the top experts on income distribution, who says, our markets are justified not only on the basis that they enhance individual freedom, but that the economic growth they create helps everyone. But at the same time, you say that the market has failed 30 million Americans. I would say that the market, as designed and as run by certainly the conservative elements within our society, is doing just what it's supposed to do, which is maximize capital, even if that means crushing labor. What do you see as the answer to this?
Well, it's just the answers that we've always had. I mean, I think that part of what's happened is that the kind of forces that gave people during the 50s and 60s in the manufacturing sector some power to fight back have been emasculated. The unions have declined in power. But you know what? The reality is that where there are unions today in the service sector, in these jobs, they've become middle-class jobs. If you take a hotel worker who works in a town like Las Vegas that has high union density, it's a very middle-class job with good wages, good health benefits, same kind of job in a town that doesn't have union density. It's a low-wage job with $8 an hour and no health benefits.
Right. So organizing labor is one of the keys to this. Excellent. Beth Shulman, The Betrayal of Work. We'll be right back with Beth and your calls. Stay tuned. 1-800-TALK-YES. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament?
How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Research on pollution's impact on health tends to overlook its effect on behavior, according to a Wisconsin psychologist. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. If a chemical pollutant is found to cause cancer, public alarm usually leads to regulations that limits people's exposure. But information on how chemicals negatively affect behavior, including motor and mental skills, is often ignored. Colleen Moore levels that charge in her book, Silent Scourge. Moore, a psychologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, emphasizes the importance of looking at behavioral effects of pollutants, especially on children.
Children are usually more sensitive to the effects of pollutants. And one principle of the effects of pollutants on children is that one negative influence on a child's life usually will not take them down a bad path, but multiple risks accumulate.
Moore says behavioral studies of pollutants are often overshadowed by cancer concerns.
An example of the neglect of the behavioral findings is part of the arguments over PCB cleanups. A lot of times the industries that will have to bear some of the financial costs argue that PCBs are only a suspected cause of cancer and we need not worry very much. But that neglects the effects on children's intellect.
Studies on children in Japan have found that exposure to PCBs made kids apathetic and lethargic. PCBs have also been found to affect children's play behavior. Moore's book focuses on five different pollutants, including PCBs, lead, mercury, and noise. She says behavioral research on each one has been done for years, but the studies get little notice. Moore says these impacts fall most heavily on children and merit a closer look when determining the health impacts of pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Malloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune in to tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network. The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Taking care of business here on the IE America Radio Network with special thanks to Steph Stryker, who has taken Labor Day to spend engineering this program. Thank you, Steph. I truly appreciate that. And to Beth Schulman, who is our guest, the author of The Betrayal of Work. In our chat room, which you can get to by going to liberaltalkradio.com and following the links to the chat room, one of the folks says, I was having a discussion on the topic yesterday of a living wage. And I have to admit, I got stuck on that point. The guy's point was that using a living wage standard was irrational because there is no objective definition. And before, Beth, I ask you for your definition of a living wage, I would like to share with you and with our listeners a recording of a president of the United States. This was a recording made by Thomas Edison in 1912. When the phrase living wage was first brought into the American lexicon. This is President Theodore Roosevelt. At this point, he was no longer president. And saying explicitly what he believed the components of a living wage were. Here's Teddy Roosevelt.
We stand for a living wage.
We stand for a living wage.
Which is abnormal if they fail to provide a living for those who devote their time and energy to industrial occupation. The monetary equivalent of a living wage varies according to local conditions.
Now, he points out the monetary equivalent of a local wage varies according to local conditions, but it will have certain criteria. Here we go.
But must include enough to secure the elements of a normal standard of living.
A normal standard of living. Excuse me, a normal standard of living.
And high enough to make morality possible.
High enough to make morality possible.
Provide for education and recreation.
Provide for education and recreation.
Care for immature members of the family.
To care for immature members of the family, in other words, to raise children.
To maintain the family during periods of sickness.
To maintain the family during periods of sickness, to pay for health care, and to keep somebody alive and going even if they can't work.
And to permit a reasonable saving for old age.
And to permit a reasonable saving for old age. Beth, your thoughts on Teddy Roosevelt?
That'd be great. We should be so lucky today. I mean, he's absolutely right. These are the basics. And as I listened to that, I was struck by, in my book, The Betrayal of Work, I proposed a group of measures that I call a compact with working Americans that are very similar to the very proposals that Teddy Roosevelt is mentioning. The ability to have a living wage, to take care of your family in terms of health care. That if, in fact, you're disabled or can't take care of your family, that we have basic unemployment comp and disabilities to ensure that you can continue on. Basic retirement benefits, for Americans. The right to a safe and healthy workforce. The ability to provide quality child care, as he mentions, the ability to take care of your family. These are so basic. These are what made America. These have been the ideals of America. And we now need to ensure that working, responsible Americans, that they have these basics.
Yeah, and perhaps a majority of working Americans actually had access to this sort of a lifestyle as a consequence of the efforts of Franklin Roosevelt instituting the vision of Teddy Roosevelt, unrelated though they were. I think they were distant third cousins, actually. But the cons, with the institution of the Reagan-Bush Revolution in 1980 just started stripping this stuff out, tearing it apart, and then the whole globalization thing. I've got a couple other questions for you about that, too. Beth, we're talking with Beth Shulman, The Betrayal of Work. But first, I want to get to this call. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Mary Jo in St. Louis, Missouri is on the line. Mary Jo, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
When you're on the radio listening, other things come up. But, Mr. Hartman, this is the first time I've been able to listen to your show live. Usually I'm at work during the day, and I can't listen on the Internet. I bought a Sirius system, but it won't work at work because I guess the local area network interferes or whatever.
Yeah.
But I am looking forward to getting this book, and I will use it as ammunition against my more libertarian, Republican, Democratic friends.
Good.
And I think, we not only need to blame George Bush for what's happening in the United States, we also need to lay blame at the feet of Bill Clinton and the conservative Democratic Leadership Council.
I agree.
Because it was Bill Clinton who shoved welfare reform through, and by putting more low-skilled people out in the workforce, it gave employers a reason and a tax incentive to pay them barely a living wage, not even a living wage. Some welfare recipients get paid less than minimum wage for doing a job, the same job at McDonald's that a non-welfare recipient is paid.
Right, and Bill Clinton was the one who pushed through NAFTA, GATT, and
Al Gore is a big free trader. Howard Dean probably supports free trade.
Well, he's changing his positions on that, actually, Mary Jo.
it's only Dennis Kucinich who's consistent in that, in being against NAFTA.
Yeah.
And also I'd like to say that I'd like to hear some discussion about the fact that George Bush is doing away with overtime pay for a lot of workers, and the fact that on July 10th, when Democrats had a chance to vote the provision down, seven of them, including Dick Gephardt, a candidate for president, did not even show up to vote. The Republicans won that by a vote of 213 to 210.
Yeah, what Mary Jo is talking about, for those of you who aren't familiar, let me just give you a little quote from an email I got from Greg Palast yesterday. I'm assuming this was published on his website. He says, in celebration of the working person's holiday, Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao, who, by the way, was one of the Bush pioneers, raised over $100,000 for his campaign and is married to Mitch McConnell, the right-wing senator. Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao has announced the Bush administration's plan to end the 60-year-old law which requires employers to pay time and a half for overtime. I'm sure you already knew that if you happened to run across page 15,576 of the Federal Register. According to the Register, where the Bush administration likes to place its little gifts to major campaign donors, 2.7 million American workers will lose their overtime pay. Nonetheless, workers getting their pay snipped shouldn't complain because they will all be receiving promotions. These employees will be reclassified as managers, exempt from the law. My and on he goes.
I can assure you that. At my workplace, if they reclassify us as exempt, I work for an auditor and insurance. I work as an auditor and an insurance company. I'll still have to send an email every morning to my supervisor, letting her know when I'm there. I will not be able to, like supervisors and managers can, leave any time of day I want without having to use my personal time for doctor's appointments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Amen.
It's exempt in name only.
Yep. Good point, Mary Jo. Mary Jo, did you have a question for Beth, our guest?
No.
Or do you just wanted to call and agree?
I'm looking forward to reading the book, and I enjoyed Nickel and Dimed by Barbara Ehrenreich. This is a pet issue with me because with jobs moving overseas, and they're all types of jobs, just not computer programming jobs, but insurance jobs like what I do, any one of us could be thrust into the world of extremely low-paid work, and I'd like to see attention paid also to the fact that there's a war on overtime and a war on workers generally, and Democrats need to develop a spine and start really sticking up for workers.
Amen. I agree. Mary Jo, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Beth, we're talking with Beth Shulman, who is the author of The Betrayal of Work, her website, thebetrayalofwork.org. Beth, what about the myth that globalization made us do it?
You know, that's a great myth about the low-wage workforce. Certainly call centers, you know, we're seeing them moving overseas. But most low-wage jobs are not in the global economy. If you take a nursing home worker or a child care worker, you can't do that job in Beijing. If you take a janitor, you can't do that job in India. So most of the low-wage jobs are not competing in the global marketplace. In fact, globalization is used kind of as a rationale to not increase wages, while in fact these jobs aren't competing globally.
Yeah.
The other important thing, Tom, I think it's important, as Mary Jo was saying, you know, we've got kind of low-wage workforce really struggling just to make it. But then what's happening is what we're seeing more and more in terms of middle-income jobs losing many, many of the things that we normally associated with the middle class. You know, as all of us know, more and more middle class jobs, workers are having to pay a far larger share of health care costs. In a lot of jobs, employers aren't offering pension plans anymore, or if they are, you know, it's a 401k in which they're not matching anymore. You're just having to put some money in. These jobs are becoming more insecure. So, and look what's happening in terms of the overtime. Here you've got an administration saying, you know, we're going to cut back in terms of overtime pay. So, you know, the middle-income jobs are also starting to look like they're taking on some of those characteristics of the low-wage workplace.
Yeah, and this is a social tragedy for America, and the cons on the right are using this to politicize the whole thing and blame the victims. It's what they used to do with rape victims. It's blame the victim. Oh, they have these labor problems. They must not be well trained, or they don't want to work, or they're lazy, or if only they had gone to college, or blah, 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 blah. And these are just absolute myths. What about the myth that more skills makes higher wage employment? I guess we've talked about that at some point.
Well, the other reality when you talk about, you know, kind of these workers and blaming individual, I mean, that is the classic conservative things. You know, it's the individual that's at fault. It's the individual at fault. These are the most responsible Americans. When I went around the country interviewing workers for my book, I was so taken by the responsibility, commitment to their jobs. I interviewed one woman who was a retail worker, worked in a retail grocery store in Michigan, and she was working three jobs. She had so many hours at different places that she had to put a planner on her wall just to figure out where she was going, and she still didn't have health insurance coverage. So.
Right.
These are the most responsible, committed Americans. If anyone's ever seen, you know, child care worker or nursing home worker, I mean, these are people doing everything America asked of them, and we're shortchanging them.
Yep. It's 15 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman, and we're speaking with Beth Shulman, the author of The Betrayal of Work, her website, thebetrayalofwork.org. Beth, let's address this myth that low-wage jobs, this is one of the favorites of the cons. They say, oh, well, yeah, we've got to have low-wage jobs because they're like an entry point. In fact, they call them entry-level jobs. They're an entry point into the economy so that people can get in there and they can get their feet wet and they can learn how to behave in the marketplace and learn how to punch a time card. And they're going to be a stepping stone to upward mobility and wonderful income someday. What do you think?
Yeah, Tom, that's a real myth. I mean, at one time, I mean, the sad reality is that mobility has gone down. I mean, if you look at low-wage workers in the United States and compare them to other low-wage workers in other industrialized countries, they're worse off. And, in fact, they have less mobility than most industrialized countries. You know, there used to be mobility, certainly in unionized workforces in the manufacturing sector. You may not have moved into a different job, but you moved up kind of a ladder in terms of seniority and pay grades. Today, those kinds of career ladders are just not available. You know, a lot of employers are segmenting their workforce on the basis of who, in fact, your workers service. So if you're working the high end, you're one group of workers. If you're servicing the low end, you're another. And it allows for very little mobility on the part of workers to move up. So it's a myth that the most low-wage workers will move into the middle class. Those stepping stones have been blocked.
Yeah, and what I've been suggesting for years, Beth, is that another great myth is the phrase free market.
Right.
That for a free market to exist would require conditions that are simply not possible. The main one being that all externalizable costs become internalized. That is to say, the environmental impact of a company actually becomes part of the cost of producing the product rather than being laid on society. But there's a whole bunch of them that have to do with labor and because there is no such thing as a free market, markets exist on the substrate of an economy which is created by government. That is to say, government creates the currency. Government regulates the currency. Government creates and brings into being, authorizes the existence of corporate institutions, that is, businesses. Government provides the legal system that allows businesses to interact with each other, the courts and the laws by which government provides the infrastructure that provides business with its labor, an educated workforce with public education, streets, highways, water, septic, electricity. All of these things are the functions, at least in their infrastructure, of government. And therefore, if you want to have a market that works, rather than handing it over to the feudal lords of the corporations, as is suggested by Norquist and all the other cons out there, my suggestion is that we should have a regulated marketplace that is rational, where social values as well as economic values, that is, as well as profit, are equally considered. Am I missing something here?
Not at all. I mean, you know, we've done this. This isn't new. We determined that, you know, employers shouldn't compete on the basis of, you know, discriminating on the basis of race, religion, national origin, sex. We determined that, you know, employers shouldn't compete on the basis of child labor. It's the same thing. We need to make decisions that say, look, you're going to compete in America, you're going to compete on the basis of quality and innovation, not by impoverishing workers. And, you know, that's a basic ideal of America, and we need to stand up for it. Now's the time to do it.
Yeah, amen. Mary Beth, we have a little less than a minute left, and first of all, I want to thank you for being on this program today. Your book, The Betrayal of Work, thebetrayalofwork.org is the website, is extraordinary. I recommend it to all my listeners. A final point you'd like to make before we go?
Yeah, it's time to honor work this Labor Day. Hopefully this is going to be the beginning of the kinds of changes and choices that truly honor working Americans.
Amen. And this is a good time to do it, but let's also not just peg it to a holiday. Let's say this is the beginning. This has to be the time, the beginning of a national crusade.
If we honor America, we need to reward these Americans.
Amen. Because they are who built America, the workers, the employees. Mary Shulman, The Betrayal of Work. Thank you very much, Mary, for being with us. I truly appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this break.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Heartburn knows how irritating it can be, which is
why you want to feel relief fast. I mean, the instant Maximum Strength Mylan's a liquid hits your throat, you can feel it rushing right to where you need it.
Ah, the cool liquid hits the back of your throat, and you know you're feeling something
velvety smooth, soothing that burning inside you. Mylan's wonderful, wet, drenching sensation
restores and refreshes in a most glorious fashion.
Try Maximum Strength Mylan's.
Ah. Soothing at the
speed of life.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Show.
Show.
An email here from Jamie. Jamie has a great idea. He was listening to the program and heard the Brett Bercy segment. Our friend down in South Carolina, who was arrested outside a Bush campaign speech. Jamie says, I have an idea for getting close to Bush with protest signs. Make a sign that says, impeach Bush, or something of that nature, one word above the other. And then have a strip of paper that is the same color as the sign's background. On this strip of paper, you print something like re-elect. Lightly stick re-elect over impeach. Carry this sign to the Bush event, and after you are safely surrounded by pro-Bush hordes, remove the re-elect portion of the sign and hold it up.
We love Bush. We love Bush. We love Bush.
Impeach Bush.
Huh? You didn't know I'm going to say that, did you?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
More united we stand, divided we fall. And if our back should ever be against the wall, we'll be together, together, you and I.
And sometimes my old brain just gets too full. I used to have a friend named Mary Beth years ago, and for some reason I was calling Beth Shulman Mary there at the end. Beth Shulman is the author of The Betrayal of Work. My apologies to her for getting her name wrong, and to you for any confusion I may have caused. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's about 4 minutes before the top of the hour. Some quotes from Ohio Republican Rutherford B. Hayes, a former president of the United States. And these were actually said, these are notes that he wrote in his personal diary. Now, he was replaced. The Republican Party essentially said no to him and put in Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, who ran arguably the most corrupt administration in the history of America. But this guy was probably one of the last. He was the last Republican who really believed in Abraham Lincoln and his principles. Here in his personal diary on January 24th, 1886, he says, "The question for America now is how to secure a more equal distribution of property among the people. There can be no Republican institutions, that is what we would today call a democracy, with vast masses of property permanently in a few hands and large masses of voters without property. To begin the work as a first step, prevent large estates from passing by will or by inheritance or by corporations into the hands of a single man. Let no man get any inheritance or by will more than will produce at 4% interest an income equal to the salary paid to the Chief Justice, to the General of the Army, or the highest officer in the Navy, say an income of $15,000 a year or an estate of $500,000. So here he is suggesting that there be an absolute tax on inheritance, that nobody be able to pass along more than $500,000. On March 18, 1886, in his personal diary, United States President Rutherford B. Hayes wrote, "At Toledo yesterday and until 1 p.m. today, at Father Hannon's, the St. Patrick's Institute this evening, I spoke of the daughters from riches in a few hands and the power and the poverty of the masses, the capital and labor question. My point is that free government cannot long endure if property is largely in a few hands and large masses of people are unable to earn homes, education, and a support in old age." This is not a new battle. These are not new ideas. But the forces arrayed on the right, the con forces who would have labor turned into serfs and slaves, are acquiring a startling power. It's time to turn it back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Is on the front
and Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years on them.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. A possible negotiated peace deal was laid out in a heavily guarded compound in Baghdad mere days before the attack, but a top former Pentagon advisor says he was ordered not to pursue the deal. They were prepared to go anywhere to talk to cut a deal, the advisor said, but was told by Richard Perle that he could not proceed without approval from the U.S. government. A senior U.S. official said the government was unaware of anyone who was in a position to offer a deal that was acceptable to Washington at the time. A group of organizations have started a campaign in support of the award-winning documentary film The Revolution Will Not Be Televised after the Canadian Pacific Region chapter of Amnesty International decided to exclude it from an upcoming Amnesty International Film Festival. The film has provided insight into a historical event with exclusive footage that reveals the details of this unconstitutional and undemocratic overthrow of an elected leader that were previously omitted by the international mass media. An official from the Venezuelan chapter of Amnesty International described the decision as censorship. There is no other word to describe it. They just want to avoid controversy due to the pressure from Venezuelan opponents to the government, said the official. The Army said Wednesday it is negotiating to replace Vice President Dick Cheney's former company as an importer of oil products into Iraq, but denied that the talks were related to Democratic allegations of price gouging by Halliburton. Robert Folletti, a spokesman for the Army Corps of Engineers, said the Army needs to find a long-term importer to serve the Iraqi population and is talking with the U.S. military's fuel delivery agency. Folletti confirmed the negotiations after they were disclosed by Representatives Henry Waxman of California and John Dingell of Michigan, two Democratic critics of the company that Cheney led before he ran for the vice presidency. The lawmakers said the Pentagon's Defense Energy Support Center imports military fuel from Kuwait to Iraq for $1.08 to $1.19 per gallon, compared with the $2.65 per gallon that Houston-based Halliburton charges the U.S. government under a no-bid Army contract.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
Police reopened roads around Tower Bridge in London after mounting public outcry over traffic gridlock caused by a protester dressed in a Spider-Man suit who has been barricaded in the cab of a crane overlooking the bridge since last Friday in a protest over child access rights of separated fathers. The protester, David Chick, says Spider-Man is a favorite cartoon character of his two-year-old daughter, whom he says he has not been able to see for 8 months. Police had closed surrounding roads and their action caused traffic chaos all over wide swaths of South London. The London Chamber of Commerce estimates business lost £10 million every working day the roads were closed.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Does Burger King have a new fire-grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no.
Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on the fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
In the Q&A session following speeches I give around the country, I'm often asked what can be done to get college students to participate in politics again. Here's an idea. Why don't we stand up for their interests by stopping the giant publishers of college textbooks from gouging students? Giants like Pearson, McGraw-Hill, and Thompson keep jacking up the price of these required texts. Overall, the price is up by 41% in only 5 years, and students, who are captive consumers, now have to spend nearly $1,000 a year on books. How do we know these prices are exorbitant? Because the textbook corporations sell the exact same books in England, France, India, Israel, Taiwan, and elsewhere for a third or half the prices that they charge college students here. Even if students buy through online discounters like Amazon, the price difference is stunning. A basic text on macroeconomics, for example, costs $114 from Amazon in the U.S., but Amazon's British division sells it for $72, including shipping. You don't need a Ph.D. in economics to figure out that 36% gouge, do you? Here's the good news. American students are figuring out their way around the gouging. Young folks are ordering their texts online from the country offering the best prices, sometimes banding together and getting deeper discounts by ordering in bulk. Some have turned loose their entrepreneurial spirit, creating small on-campus companies that buy cheap through the web, sell at a discount to fellow students, and pocket a neat profit. Even college bookstores are buying the publisher's product overseas, then selling cheaper to their student customers on campus. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, the publishing giants are howling, trying to stop this grassroots exercise of global consumer power. But their gouging is wrong, and it's time for our political leaders to side with students using antitrust laws to stop the ripoff.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an earlier program, so don't call today, and thanks for listening.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, live coast-to-coast on commercial radio stations, broadcasting from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming live on the Internet from IEAmericaRadio.com, RadioPower.org, Live365.com, and with archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org. I want to talk this hour about one of the dirty little secrets of the right. This is one of the most bizarre and interesting things. Whenever I start poking into it, I almost have to pull back, just, you know, in kind of recoil mode. I want to say, first of all, I have friends who are and who have been members of cults. A very good friend of mine is a member of the what do they call it, the Hare Krishnas in Washington, D.C. Louise and I have stayed at their place in Washington. We've gone to their hoop-de-doops and sat and chanted with them. I think that they're relatively harmless, and these people are actually, I think it provides I think any kind of a religious cult that's not real toxic provides a reasonable place for people to hang out. I mean, you know, you, like the monasteries used to in the Dark Ages. And another one of my very good friends used to be in the What was the guy's name who was the claimed he was the enlightened master, the 13-year-old or 14? Maharaji. And then he got deprogrammed by Ted Patrick. And then he became a deprogrammer, and now he's a psychologist in Baltimore. And Hilly is a good friend. And so I have more than a little passing familiarity with these things. But one of the cults that is the most, in my opinion, the most toxic is that of Reverend Sung Myung Moon, the Moonies. I have encountered Moonies. I've tried to have conversations with Moonies. I've never been inside the organization. I should qualify this by that, as I have been inside some of these others. But the mind control techniques used by the Moonies are well documented. So when you run across something like the fact that in 1997, Reverend Moon, using a front organization that he had created and that he ran called the Women's Federation for World Peace, gave a $3.5 million loan to a right-wing group that was having financial difficulties called the Christian Heritage Foundation that was run by Jerry Falwell, and then said, don't bother paying us back. Forgave the loan. In other words, basically gave for Jerry Falwell $3.5 million and said, hey, here you go. This was reported, by the way, in the Washington Post. And the reason that the Christian Heritage Foundation needed this money was to help Falwell's Liberty University, which was in trouble. A Moon publishing outfit also in 1996, a year earlier, had loaned $400,000 to Jerry Falwell to help prop up Liberty University. When you see these kind of things, you wonder, wait a minute, what is going on? What is up here? So I want to share with you some of the things that we've found looking into the connections. Some would say the takeover of the right wing in America by Reverend Moon. Fascinating stuff. Before we get further into this, though, Sean in Georgia's on the line. Our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. If you have thoughts, questions, comments, opinions, arguments, whatever you'd like, Sean, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, thanks, Tom. How's it going there?
Hey, I'm great, Sean. How about you?
I'm enjoying my happy Labor Day. I've got a question about, first off, I want to thank you for having Jim Hightower on last week. It was great show. I absolutely loved it. Went out and bought his book. And actually went out and bought your book, too, because it was at the bookstore, too. I haven't delved into yours yet, but I'll tell you, Hightower.
Which one did you get?
Unequal Protection.
Ah,
and,
good.
Thieves in High Places by Hightower. I tell you, it makes me so darn mad that I have to put it down for a while and stop reading and, you know, calm down.
Yeah.
It just burns my hind end so much. But the question that I had for you was on a radio program that you had, I think it was last week, where you quoted Jefferson talking about how the First Amendment was designed to protect heathens and pagans and whatnot.
Right.
You know, I delved through your book trying to find that quote, hoping it was in there, but I couldn't find it. I'm wondering, where did you get that? I really wanted to get a copy of that so that I can use that as ammo.
I got it from the collected works of Thomas Jefferson. I've got he wrote about 15,000 letters in his lifetime, and I have them all on a CD-ROM. And I'm working right now on a book on the history of American democracy. And in fact, just this morning, I finished writing. I'm looking around for it, and I don't see the draft of it. Maybe it's in the trash here. Just this morning, no, I'll have to get it to you after the break. Just this morning, I finished writing a piece that I don't know if Common Dreams will take it because it runs 3,000 words. It's fairly long. Oh. That has that quote in it. So I'll dig that out during the break at 20 minutes after, and then at 25 after, I'll read you that quote, and I'll tell you exactly where it came from. Will that help, Sean?
Do you think you could post that?
Like, yeah, sure.
Or something?
Yeah, well, this piece that I just wrote, if Common Dreams doesn't run it in the next couple of days, I'll post it on my bulletin board.
Okay, and also I wanted to comment that I'm alive today because of labor unions. My dad was in the a union, had the best health care plan I've ever heard of. I don't see that kind of health care plan around today. But I had a kidney disorder, and because of his health plan, I'm alive today because it was a, you know, I had to have two surgeries in order to basically be alive. So, you know, God bless the unions.
Amen.
That's all I got to say.
Amen.
All right, thanks a lot, Tom.
Okay, thanks for the call, Sean. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK, yes, is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Back in April, there was a summit on faith-based initiatives for family and community renewal. Now, that sounds fairly benign, doesn't it? It's a Mooney Front Group. It's put together, promoted at the grassroots level, by the American Leadership Conference. Sounds pretty solid. Which is a project of the American Family Coalition and the Washington Times Foundation. Both of which are front groups for Reverend Moon. And Representative J.C. Watts issued a press release noting that the GOP's faith-based summit. Now get it, this Reverend Moon is putting on this gig, and the Republicans are calling it their own. Representative J.C. Watts, the Republican representative, issued a press release noting that the GOP's faith-based summit would be viewed by satellite at events in over 45 cities. So who is this Reverend Moon? What's this all about? His church, the Unification Church, which recently underwent a name change to make it more palatable to the right wing, we'll get to that in a second, was founded officially in the 1960s. He claims that Jesus Christ failed in his mission on earth, that he was crucified too early and therefore he failed, and that Moon himself, Reverend Moon, has come to earth as the, quote, new Messiah, end quote, in order to, quote, fulfill the mission of God that Jesus left unfulfilled, end quote. And how? He says he's going to do it by, quote, uniting the world through uniting religious forces, end quote. His brainwashing techniques are well known. In fact, I would suggest that we're seeing them now in many of the right-wing tactics that are used in the media. His victory over communism organization, Reverend Moon's, a South Korean organization, is used to re-educate South Korean masses who foolishly believe in democracy. He's made phenomenal inroads into the GOP. Think about this for a minute. The GOP as a front group for Reverend Moon. I mean, it was during the Clinton administration that Moon came out in public and said he was giving up on America. He says, that's it, I'm leaving. But then when George Bush was selected President of the United States, he said he had a change of heart. Now, all through the Clinton administration, of course, he was fighting a good fight, publishing the Washington Times and with the Washington Times Foundation. The Washington Times, the newspaper in Washington, D.C., that all the Republicans love to read and quote, which has never made a penny, has been entirely subsidized by the Moonies. You see these kids outside the supermarket selling flowers. The last time I saw one, she was sitting in a phony wheelchair. I mean, it was a real wheelchair, but there was nothing disabled about her. She was sitting in this wheelchair with a blanket over her legs, selling flowers, trying to look pathetic. Turned out she was a Moonie. And the money from these kids are standing on street corners selling roses when cars go by, or carnations. The money from these kids is funding the Washington Times, the GOP's main published organ in official media. Think about it for a minute. Just think about this for a minute. Moon specializes in the creation of what are called astroturf organizations. You know how grass takes time to grow, right? You have to plant the seeds, and then the roots go down, and all that sort of thing. Well, if you want to have instant grass, you can do what a lot of baseball stadiums have done. That is, you put down AstroTurf. That is, boom, you roll the stuff out like carpet, and you've got instant grass. And it looks like it grew there. It looks like it has roots that go deep in the soil. It looks like it took time, when in fact it appeared in a matter of minutes. And Moon specializes in these things. This is one of his most powerful techniques. And he's been using these AstroTurf organizations to curry favor with Republicans for over 30 years now. Journalist Frederick Clarkson said, and I quote, "Whenever the conservatives identify an issue as important to their agenda, Reverend Moon creates an AstroTurf organization to create the appearance of grassroots support for these initiatives." For example, the Washington Times itself, which was founded in 1982 by Moon, has become the main mouthpiece of the GOP. And let's look at a few more. This is bizarre and fascinating stuff. Right here, in the midst of the vast radical middle conspiracy, take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Anyone who gets heartburn knows how irritating it can be, which is
why you want to feel really fast. I mean, the instant Maximum strikes my lines, a liquid hits your throat, you can feel it rushing right to where you need it.
Ah, the cool liquid hits the back of your throat, and you know you're feeling something
velvety smooth, soothing that burning inside you. My Lanta's wonderful, wet, drenching sensation
restores and refreshes in a most glorious fashion.
Try Maximum Strength My Lanta.
Soothing at the
speed of life.
We'll be back with more music, but first, a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
Tune into IE America Radio Network weekdays for the best in progressive talk radio.
The Tom Hartman Show.
That's the Tom Hartman Program right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The Marianne Williamson Show.
Hi, everybody. I'm so happy to be here today. I'm glad you're with me. I will be on every Monday through Friday afternoon from 3 to 5 p.m.
Family Talk.
This is Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera.
The All-American Talk Radio Show.
All-American Talk Radio with Peter B. Collins and Peter Lawford.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I know I have a reputation of being fiery, hard-edged, passionate, outspoken, opinionated, and sometimes explosive. And that reputation is well-deserved because I am. I'm a liberal with a microphone, and that makes me dangerous.
For more information on these shows and other shows, or to listen live, visit us on the web at ieamericaradio.com.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
You know this language that we speak is part German, Latin, and part Greek, Celtic and Arabic, all that I need. Well amended by the people in the street, the Choctaw gave us the word.
Now, I know that you've all heard the jokes about the Moonies. Like the one about the Moonie who walks into the store and says to the proprietor behind the counter, I'd like a moon pie and an RC. I tell this joke with apologies to the memory of Louis Grizzard. I'd like a moon pie and an RC. And the guy behind the counter says, well, no, I'm sorry, I can't give that to you. And the Moonie says, well, is that because I'm a Moonie? Is that you must be discriminating against me? And the guy behind the counter says, no, I'm not. And he says, well, is it because I asked for a moon pie and you don't like Reverend Moon? And the guy behind the counter goes, well, no, it's not. And the guy says, well, is it because you know I'm with the Unification Church or because I was panhandling out in front asking for money? And the guy behind the counter says, no, it's really not. And the guy says, is it because I've been supporting all these Republicans and giving, you know, because Reverend Moon gave millions of dollars to Jerry Falwell? And the guy behind the counter goes, no, really, that's got nothing to do with it. And the guy goes, well, why is it that you won't sell me a moon pie and an RC? And the guy says, well, because this here's a hardware store. So anyhow, you've all heard the jokes but at some level this isn't funny. I mean, this is serious stuff. The Washington Times Foundation holds opulent seminars, dinners, and other events that are constantly filled with the top names of the religious right, the clergy, the political leaders. Here is a short list of people who Reverend Moon has paid huge money to. In one case, he gave $1 million to George Herbert Walker Bush to give a speech. He's paid Jack Kemp, Dan and Marilyn Quayle, Jesse Helms, Orrin Hatch. These are all people who took money from Reverend Moon to give speeches. Jeannie Kirkpatrick, William Bennett, Alexander Haig, Ralph Reed, Gary Bauer, Beverly LaHaye, Jerry Falwell, many times has been paid by Reverend Moon to give speeches. Moon bailed Falwell out of a tight political situation in 1997. As I mentioned before, the Women's Federation for World Peace, a Moon front group, gave $3.5 million to the Christian Heritage Foundation with instructions to use it to buy some of the debt encouraged by Liberty University, which is Falwell. A Moon publishing outfit gave a $400,000 low-interest loan to Falwell in 1996 for Liberty University. In the year 2000, the Washington Times Foundation held an event honoring Moon, where Falwell received the Distinguished Lifetime Achievement Award for Freedom, Faith, and Family. Did you see that on Faux News? I don't think so. Rick Santorum and Joseph Lieberman serve as caucus chairman for the Empowerment Network. Another one of these affiliated with Moon front group bunches. David Caprera, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, David Caprera, is a Unification Church member and former Assistant Secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development under Jack Kemp. He's real well connected in Washington, D.C. He's president of the American Family Coalition, a Moon front, represents the Washington Times Foundation, and he runs the Empowerment Network, this public policy organization that promotes faith-based solutions to society's problems. And on the on the board with him as caucus chairman, rather, of this organization are Rick Santorum and Joseph Lieberman. All these guys are in bed with Moon, with Reverend Moon. Now, you may call me a religious bigot, but I frankly don't believe that Reverend Moon is the reincarnation of Jesus Christ come to earth to finish Jesus' mission. I'm sorry, I don't believe it. And his running around claiming it gives me a few concerns. Whether, you know, regardless of your belief, I think I should give all of us concerns. Stay tuned, we'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Research on pollution's impact on health tends to overlook its effect on behavior, according to a Wisconsin psychologist. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. If a chemical pollutant is found to cause cancer, public alarm usually leads to regulations that limits people's exposure. But information on how chemicals negatively affect behavior, including motor and mental skills, is often ignored. Colleen Moore levels that charge in her book, Silent Scourge. Moore, a psychologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, emphasizes the importance of looking at behavioral effects of pollutants, especially on children.
Children are usually more sensitive to the effects of pollutants, and one principle of the effects of pollutants on children is that one negative influence on a child's life usually will not take them down a bad path, but multiple risks accumulate.
Moore says behavioral studies of pollutants are often overshadowed by cancer concerns.
An example of the neglect of the behavioral findings is part of the arguments over PCB cleanups. A lot of times the industries that will have to bear some of the financial costs argue that PCBs are only a suspected cause of cancer and we need not worry very much. But that neglects the effects on children's intellect.
Studies on children in Japan have found that exposure to PCBs made kids apathetic and lethargic. PCBs have also been found to affect children's play behavior. Moore's book focuses on five different pollutants, including PCBs, lead, mercury, and noise. She says behavioral research on each one has been done for years, but the studies get little notice. Moore says these impacts fall most heavily on children and merit a closer look when determining the health impacts of pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of
Wisconsin.
You've
got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show,
where we serve you food with attitude plus a heap and helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, young one, tofu, and you.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'd get up each morning and dust off my wits, open the paper and read the obits. If I'm not in there, I know I'm not dead.
So I eat up the breakfast and go back to bed. And how do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go just got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been.
Sort of a labor song there for Labor Day. Welcome. It's Tom Hartman on Labor Day, September 1st, 03, day 204 in the search for weapons of mass destruction, day 720 in the search for Osama bin Laden. The son, the brother of the man who bailed George W. Bush out of trouble when he his Harkin Energy Company was going south, and the son of the man who is who was business partners with the father of George W. Bush. In fact, meeting with that group was meeting on 9/11 in Washington, D.C. Anyhow, day 720 in the search for Osama bin Laden. Reverend Moon has recently been trying to gain favor with African-American religious leaders. Unlike Republicans, however, the African-American religious leaders have pretty easily seen through what's going on. They've been spotting the front groups and calling him on it and saying, no thanks, ain't going to do it. But this faith-based initiative campaign, the white right-wing Republicans have just embraced this whole hog, and Reverend Moon has turned this into an industry. And why is he, you know, hooking up with George Bush to go, yeah, faith-based initiatives, yeah, let's do it, let's do more, 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 more of that taxpayer dollar going to churches. Why? Well, because he's the new Messiah, and he's got the church. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico is on the line. Roy, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Roy.
This is a wonderful day, isn't it?
Well, any day I'm alive is a wonderful day, but today is a particular
day. That's right. I just took a deep breath, and it felt really good. One of the things that irritates me about this whole Mooney Times deal is now they also own UPI.
That's right, United
and
Press
they
International.
They have credibility as being a news source. And they're quoted on C-SPAN, and they're quoted on CNN, and they're quoted here, and they're quoted there. And then when they're talking about to the editors and the reporters and whatnot, and somebody throws a question at them about, you know, how can you in good conscience work for the Mooney Times? Well, I have never been told what to say. Well, you know, if you're smart enough to get that big a high-profile job, you've got to be smart enough not to be told what not to say.
Right.
And to me, that's the whole, that distortion. And then,
everybody, you know, everybody in every job in America knows that there are certain boundaries. There are certain things that you just don't say, you know. Roy, you're breaking up there. We lost him. Roy, that cell phone croaked on you. Thanks for the call. I appreciate the comments, but the phone wouldn't hold together. But I agree with you, and my point is that, and I've heard these guys on Faux News, which is another example, by the way. Here you've got a quote news source end quote that is run by Roger Ailes, who's a former Republican operative, and run by a corporation that fought a lawsuit down in Florida over the right to fire a news employee who wanted to tell the truth on the air and asserted that they had the right to force their news employees to lie on the air. You'll recall we had Jane Aker on the show a week or two ago. And so, yeah, the bottom line, and I've heard these guys on TV, usually on Faux News, and somebody will say, you're with the Mooney Times, and they'll say, I've never been told what to say or what not to say. Well, of course not. Of course not. But I guarantee you, there is never going to be a good expose story on Reverend Moon in the Mooney Times, in the Washington Times. There's never going to be a story talking about the things we're talking about here right now. Those people won't tell you because they want to keep their jobs. These guys have huge salaries. You can make so much more money right now writing for the right in America, for the right wing, for the cons. And I say this speaking I have 14 books in print, and I've been published in literally hundreds of newspapers and magazines as contributing editor to 7 different magazines. I understand the business. I'm in the middle of it. And I can tell you right now, if I write articles for progressive publications and liberal publications, I will be paid at the most a few hundred bucks And for many of them, nothing at all, particularly the websites. Whereas if I was to suddenly tomorrow have a Dennis Miller kind of conversion or a Christopher Hitchens see the light, suddenly I'm a conservative. With the kind of record that I have in publishing, it probably wouldn't be particularly difficult to make a few $100,000 a year writing for some of the right-wing websites and the right-wing publications. The people who write for these right-wing magazines and newspapers, particularly those supported by Reverend Moon, make very good money. Of course, they've never been told what to say or not to say. They're not stupid. They don't need to be told what to say or not to say. So anyhow, back to the faith-based initiative campaign. Moon recently did a 50-state We Will Stand tour. That's what it was called. It was meant to discuss family issues and plug George Bush's family, faith-based initiative programs and family-based initiative programs. But, you know, Reverend Moon, who's 81 years old, at one of these sites, one of these things, got up and in front of a, and I mean, these were 98% of the people in the audience were white, middle-class, Republican Christians. And Reverend Moon gets up, and he starts talking about how the misuse of love organs by women. He talks about how women's love organs are shaped in a submissive fashion and men's are shaped in a dominant fashion, and this defines how things are and things should be. And he goes into this whole tirade about misusing love organs, and he says that this is how women cause divorce in America, and he blames it all on women. And then he goes on to say that married couples who don't produce offspring, who don't produce children, will go to hell. And he attacks gays and lesbians and says, those who go after free sex are less than animals. And he starts talking about how he's the reincarnation of Jesus, or he has come to earth to fulfill the failed mission of Jesus Christ. And these white middle-class Republicans, I mean, clearly this guy is like, you know, over 81 years old. He's starting to lose it. And they're just, you know, they're hanging, you can see their fingernails are digging into each other's knees. They're hanging on for life. Because they know, you know, there's good Republicans speaking before and after Reverend Moon. And but still, people were getting up and walking out. And somehow the story of his, shall we call them, faux pas, his misstatements, as they say when the Georgia W. does one of these kinds of things, never made the press, or at least the mainstream media. But they sure happened. And despite these overt views, Moon operatives won endorsements from the local clergy in every one of the 50 cities where he did this tour. Every single one of them. Where does he get his money? Well, he's sure not getting it from the Mooney Washington Times, because that's been losing money ever since it started. Frederick Clarkson notes that the possible sources include foreign government intelligence agencies and Moon-controlled businesses around the world. I remember back when he was indicted for tax evasion, they said that he was a weapons dealer. He was a defense contractor in Korea. He actually went to jail, you'll recall, in the 1980s for tax evasion. And that trial indicated that much of his money came from Japan. But his original capital, the money that this guy started out with, that he's using to buy and manipulate these Republicans, most likely came from the door-to-door sales work of his cult followers, of these brainwashed kids going door-to-door. And maybe from a company called Carr Arms, K-A-H-R, which Moon owns, that makes handguns. And he also apparently has a pretty good lock on the ginseng business in Korea, as well as Korean computers and seafood. And he owns a bank and a hotel in Uruguay, where he maintains a large estate. Once George Bush came back into the White House, Moon concentrated on America. He's always felt that Moon has always hated America, but has considered it necessary for his goals. And now that George has gone along with his faith-based social program thing, Moon is loving it. He's just absolutely loving it. Louise, could you grab that thing that I just wrote for Common Dreams, please, and bring that out here? He wants to ultimately combine all the faiths, all the various Christian faiths, and conceivably all the faiths, but since he positions himself as the reincarnation of Christ, maybe all the faiths, and create a theological state headed by himself. And here's where it gets even stranger. You know, the best-selling books in America in the last decade were the novels, the Left Behind novels, by Tim LaHaye and Jerry somebody or other. These are the books, a series of books, they've been made into a movie, where all the Christians suddenly, boom, go to heaven in the rapture. And I actually read part of the first book in the series, and this guy's an airline pilot, and he's having an affair with a flight attendant, and so they're not going to go to heaven, right, because they're not good people, they're not saved. And she comes up and tells him that all over the airplane there's just piles of clothing on various seats. People have vanished, mostly women and children. And airplanes are crashing all over America, and he can't get controllers on the land. This is the beginning of the end, right? This is the rapture. And these, and then it goes on from there, you know. And now in the fourth, fifth, sixth book, this Islamic guy who's the Antichrist is rising up to take over the world. And these books have sold tens of millions of copies. They are the, you won't find them on the New York Times bestseller list because they're considered Christian literature, which isn't counted. But they are outselling all other books in America. And their authors are becoming multimillionaires. And so here comes the Council of National Policy, the CNP. It was founded in 1981 by Tim LaHaye, who is the author of the Left Behind books. And it was funded back in 1981 before the Left Behind books were written and before they were popular and before they were a national phenomenon, before Tim LaHaye was a superstar, a Christian superstar. It was founded and funded, or it was funded anyway, by, guess who? Reverend Moon. It is reported that Tim LaHaye received $500,000 from a Mr. Bo Hee Park, Moon's number one man and a former CIA officer. Though the tape exists showing that LaHaye thanked Pack for the money, LaHaye never denied the charge but verbally attacked the sources verifying the allegation with a barrage of insults. Are the Moonies trying to take over the conservative movement in the United States? Or have they already done it? Some of the political leaders involved with the Moon-sponsored CNP group include Senators Jesse Helms, Senator Don Nichols, Senator Trent Lott, Representative and former exterminator extraordinaire Tom DeLay, Dan Burton, and foaming at the mouth, Bob Dornan. Another past Moon organization was the Coalition for Religious Freedom, where again, Tim LaHaye, the author of the Left Behind books, held a paid position as chairman. It was formed by LaHaye after Moon was arrested for tax evasion. Jerry Falwell, Jimmy Swaggart, James Robeson, James Kennedy, and Rex Humbard all have served as executive committee members. Other notables to serve on Moon's CRF include Hal Lindsey. Those of you who were had anything to do with Christianity in the 70s, remember Hal Lindsey? He wrote the late great Planet Earth about the coming rapture. I remember reading that book. I really got into that for a little while. I was fascinated by it. I thought, you know, could it be? Maybe. Who knows? Anyhow, I think I've since... Hal Lindsey was on the board. Paul Crouch, head of the Trinity Broadcasting Network, this huge religious right-wing conservative broadcasting network, Dr. D. James Kennedy, and Don Wildman, to name a few. CRF President Don Sills admits that the CRF has received no less than $500,000 from Moon sources. In 1984, despite forces in government opposing the move, Moon was jailed for tax evasion. In a CRF-sponsored rally, Tim LaHaye, the author of the Left Behind books, asked that people go to jail with Reverend Moon in protest. What is up? What is up? Isn't this incredible? Isn't this just absolutely incredible? The faith-based initiative, this whole thing. Are the Moonies trying to take over the conservative movement in the United States of America? I would say it sure looks like it. It's just absolutely extraordinary how this is coming. And now on the topic of America becoming like here's a quote. This is, you'd asked me before for a quote. I'll just give you a quick one, and then after the break I'll get the one that you called and asked about. Dr. Rush tells me, this is from Thomas Jefferson's diary, February 1, 1799. Dr. Rush tells me that he had it from Asa Green that when the clergy addressed George Washington on his departure from the government, it was observed in their consultation that he had never, on any occasion, said a word to the public which showed a belief in the Christian religion. And they thought he should so pen their address as to force him at length to publicly declare whether he was a Christian or not. They did so. However, he observed, the old fox was too cunning for them. He answered every article of their address particularly except that, which he passed over without notice. Rush observes he never did say a word on the subject. I know that Governor Morris, who pretended to be in his secrets and believed himself to be so, that he often told me that George Washington believed no more in fundamentalist Christianity than he himself did. End quote. We've got the Moonies out here running this campaign to convince Americans that the founders were fundamentalist Christians so that the Moonies can get their hands into these faith-based initiative programs and suck out money from taxpayers. It is bizarre in the extreme. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
If you've got a clogged up nose, Simply Stuffy. If you've got a snuffly nose, Simply Stuffy. If the rest of you feels fine, but your nose is out of line, give your schnozzle what it needs, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. From the makers of Children's Tylenol, it has only the medicine your child needs to make a stuffy nose simply disappear.
If you want to smell a rose, get the stuff out of your nose. If you're sick of feeling snotty, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. Use as directed.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Kathy. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
If you think people are more important than corporations.
An interview with George and Pickles from the current issue of Ladies Home Journal. They're asked about what September 11, 2001 was like for them personally. Although over 3,000 people had just perished, George W. was able to find some humor by the end of the day.
The day ended on a relatively humorous note. The agent said, "You'll be sleeping downstairs." And I said, "No, we like our own bed." So I told the agent, "We're going upstairs." And the agent comes running up and says, "Run your attack. We need you downstairs." So there we go. I'm in my running shorts and my t-shirt, and I'm barefooted. Got the dog in one hand. Laura had the cat.
I don't have my contacts in, and I'm in my fuzzy house slippers.
We're heading straight down to the basement because there's an incoming unidentified airplane which is going here toward the White House. And then the guy says it's a friendly airplane, and we hustle all the way back upstairs and go to bed.
And we just lay there thinking about the way we must have looked.
We got a laugh out of it.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or t-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I was making my way through the wasteland. The road into town passes through. I was changing the radio station with my mind on you.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Here's the hope in this situation, and that is that we can return to the ideals of the founders of this nation. That the Republicans will be exposed in their unholy consortium with Reverend Moon, and people will be so horrified by it that they'll turn away from it and say, "Whoa, no thanks." Here's that letter, the caller, I forget who it was who called and asked about it, but September 23rd, 1800, 9/23/1800, 2 months before Thomas Jefferson was elected President of the United States. At the time, he was Vice President of the United States. He, of course, being the author of the First Amendment that guarantees freedom of religion in the United States, wrote a letter to his friend, Dr. Benjamin Rush. He said, "Dear sir, I promised you a letter on Christianity, which I have not forgotten. I have a view of the subject which ought to displease neither the rational Christians nor deists. I do not know that it would reconcile the genus irritable vetum, who are all in arms against me. Their hostility is on too interesting ground to be softened. The delusion into which the XYZ plot showed it impossible to push the people, the successful experiment made under the prevalence of the delusion on the clause of the Constitution," he's talking about the First Amendment here, "which, while it secured the freedom of the press, covered also the freedom of religion, had given to the clergy," now he's talking about how, because of the First Amendment, the clergy thought they were going to gain power, "had given to the clergy a very favorable hope of obtaining an establishment of a particular form of Christianity throughout the United States. And as every sect believes its own form to be the only true one, everyone perhaps hoped for his own, but especially the Episcopalians and Congregationalists. The returning good sense of our country," Jefferson wrote, "threatens abortion to their hopes, and they believe that any power confided in me will be exerted in opposition to their schemes. And they believe rightly, for I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man." That's that quote from the Jefferson Memorial. He was speaking about the clergy. "But this is all they have to fear from me, and enough, too, in their opinion. And this is the cause of their printing lying pamphlets against me, forging conversations for me, etc." So, The hope here is that we return to the ideals on which this nation was founded, that government and religion are separate entities, and that we can once again have a nation of, by, and for we, the people. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Thank you for joining me. Thanks to Steph Stryker for engineering the program, to Joe McPherson in Georgia, and Louise Hartman here for helping produce it. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be back, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Right? Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal celebrity boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.